Welcome to Varsity. I'm Scott Wright. This is the News OK Varsity Podcast. I'm Scott Wright of The Oklahoman. Jacob Unruh by my side. We are back. Week four of the high school football season is here. Man, it's been wild so far.
Now it gets real.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's for real for just about everybody. A few really interesting non-district games out there this week. I actually put two non-district games in the top 10 of the top 10 games this week, which I almost never do once district play starts. I don't, because there's going to be some non-district games sprinkled in from here on out. But we'll talk about more of that in a minute. But it was a really fun week three. We're going to talk about some of the surprises through the non-district season. Look ahead to week four, but let's get back to week three and our weekly segment, the game you wish you saw.
I think I'm going to start with, I wanted to go Heritage Hall Davis on this a little bit. That was an exciting game. Yeah. Blake Adams played really well for Heritage Hall, but this Kingfisher Bethany game interests me.
Right.
I've seen a lot of low scoring games to start the year, but at least I've seen a touchdown.
Right.
All field goals. We have Kate Strickland on our poll, which ends later today. That sounds like an interesting game to me. Kingfisher's playing a little better than maybe I had thought in my head that they would a little bit start the year. Yeah. And that sounds like a game that I would have enjoyed to seen come down to a couple field goals.
Yeah. I mean, to see any high school game, particularly between a 3A and a 4A team, be strictly field goals, mm-hmm. have enough kickers good enough to make mm-hmm. that many field goals that's pretty rare at that level. There's not a lot of great kickers at the 3A and 4A level or consistent ones anyway.
Exactly. And I just thought of another one too that I wrote about Sunday. Idabel losing to Nashville.
Absolutely.
Arkansas.
How about that for the polar opposite of a four field goal game, a
91 to 63.
That's
unreal.
Yeah. And what was it? 90 points in the first half. Between the two teams. So,
it was the running back for Nashville had 8 touchdowns and, like, I don't remember, like 400 yards or something.
Right, ridiculous. Exactly. Like, it was ridiculous. And that still only accounts for about half of the team's points, which is unbelievable. Nashville, Arkansas was a 4A state champion mm-hmm. last year over in Arkansas, and Idabel, it's been a solid team the last few years. To see that kind of numbers on the board is I can't imagine what it was like sitting there watching.
Man.
Going, is anybody going to tackle? They going to tackle
that's
somebody?
That's what the coach was telling me. He said we can't tackle.
Yeah,
he just flat out told me. He said we can't tackle. He said we're going to use this off week to learn how to tackle. So I mean, good luck, Idabel.
Right, and I mean because to have that many points. You have to have a lot of big plays and quick drives mm-hmm. just to get enough possessions to even score that many points. I can't fathom what it was like to sit there. Mm-hmm. How about if you'd done that back to back? Say Bethany Kingfisher had been a Thursday game and you went and watched that and you saw 9-3 with four field goals accounting for all the points, and then you go to Idabel and Nashville, Arkansas.
I would have gotten real snarky on Twitter with my tweets.
It would have been fun. It would have been hard to keep up with. I'm glad I didn't have to type the post game box score, the scoring summary of that game.
Can you imagine the math on that?
Oh no, I don't. I can't do math that high. That's no, anything above what I'm working with my first grader or my second grader at home. that's about my limit. He and I are right mathematically. We're right on the same level.
What's the mathematics right now at second grade level? Now I don't even know what that is now.
Now he's we're working a lot on it's a lot about speed. Recognizing the math facts and not having to think about what is 6 minus 4. Just being able to see 6 minus 4 and knowing that it's 2. It's just about the repetition right now. And so I can handle that.
Is there speed drills for this?
Oh man, they got apps. He's got an app.
Oh,
it's called
we didn't have
Reflex.
Apps.
Right, exactly. We didn't deal with that. We had. I'm sure you had the timed tests.
Yeah,
you had to, yeah. You sit down. Yeah. You got a page full of math facts, and you got to race through them as fast as you can. It's now it's an app with a game, and it's like he's got these games at carnivals, and you got to win the prize.
Oh,
speaking of, I took him to the fair. That was fun. I'm getting way off topic.
No, you're fine.
Had a blast at the fair. Spent way too much money trying to win a Pokemon. But
did you win one?
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
Actually, the first one that we won was just because the lady felt sorry for us because we finished second in like the balloon race thing, the water gun balloon race, like 3 times in a row. And but both of us were right there. And one of them, I wanted to see an instant replay because I think our balloon popped before the other kid. But anyway, but that lady felt bad after we spent so much money trying to win, and so she gave us one. But well, she didn't give him the one that he wanted, which was a little bit annoying.
Oh, that is annoying, but at least something.
Right.
My wife and I, we went Friday, and we didn't play games, but we drank. We didn't actually drink. We had food. We just ate a lot of the crazy food, the deep-fried mashed potatoes and the buffalo dip and corn dog and candy apples and she likes the barbecue parfait.
No, yeah.
Which is like pork and mashed potatoes and barbecue sauce all in a cup, right. Like a parfait. Yeah. And I had a donut cheeseburger.
We've gone way too far down this rabbit hole already.
That's fine.
But you told me about that and I looked for it. I could not find it and I was very disappointed.
It was at the barbecue stand where you get the parfait.
Now I'm really upset because I saw the I saw the sign for the parfait.
Yeah, it's at the same stand.
Anyway,
I should have told you. That's all right.
I meant to ask and I forgot to.
Yeah, it was fantastic. A glazed donut as the bun. It was warm. It was fresh. It was good.
Yeah. No, I was really disappointed. I couldn't find that. Okay, football.
Yes, we're here to talk about high school football.
If anybody's still listening now, we appreciate you very much more than you know.
Thanks for subscribing.
The game that I wish I saw. Which one we did have covered in our paper, Midwest City and Dell City.
Mm-hmm.
That's a rivalry I think that doesn't get talked up a lot these days because they moved into different classes and a lot of different things have happened. But that's traditionally two really good football programs that have had a lot of really talented players come out of there, and to play a really tight game like they had this week. Was interesting on a lot of facets, both historically and with implications on this year, because I think it shows us a little bit of just how good this Dell City team is. Because I was still kind of curious. They've had a couple of good wins to start the year, but I mean they're in a really loaded district. They're gonna have some other really big tests starting this week, but which we can get to later, but. It really showed me a lot for them to go hang with Midwest City the way that they did, to put up 21 points, because that Midwest City defense is seriously good.
Yeah.
I know that that overall Midwest City has kind of taken a little bit of a beating and they're taking some heat. A lot of the alumni are upset and don't like Darrell Hall, things like that. But that defense is ridiculously good, and as long as if Preston Colbert, their sophomore quarterback, can keep developing, I think he's got a chance to be pretty good. I think that they're going to bounce back really strong this year. The problem for them is that district looks way better than we thought it was. When you talk about Putnam City coming down from 6A1, Deer Creek came up from 5A. Stillwater is better than a lot of people expected. Choctaw is better than a lot of people expected. And then you still got Midwest City and Lawton at the top that where everybody expected them to be. There's a whole lot of really good football. And I didn't even throw in Putnam City West, who I think is kind of the team that's kind of sneaky good right now, and is gonna surprise some people with once they can kind of get into competition against their level. So it's gonna be really interesting. But I that would have been the game that I wish I saw.
Jake Corbin is doing a heck of a job there.
He really is
for Dell City.
He really is. We should clear up. We've run it in the paper, and I've written it because I misunderstood the situation. I think we've written it a couple of times. Mm-hmm. We corrected it in the paper, but he grew up in Dell City, graduated from Carl Albert.
Yes.
So Dell City is what he considers
his
native home. Yes. Exactly. He's a Dell City boy. He the very first time I discussed it with him, he talked to told me these stories of riding his bike up to Cal Sioux Stadium.
Yeah, it's easier to misunderstand it because I think I got confused who talked with him over the summer.
Right. Exactly. So. Yeah. I mean, you start talking to me about what I was doing when I was five in UConn, and you're going to assume that I graduated there.
Yeah.
I did, but still.
It's, yeah.
Anyway, that's a different story. But. He's a Dell City boy. He was an assistant coach at Dell City before he moved on. He understands the kids there. He understands the culture of Dell City, and he understands what they're capable of. Obviously, because he has stepped right in and has his team playing really well, really better than I anticipated.
I didn't see it coming.
With what was I thought I had heard that they had some really young talent coming up, But I thought that they were farther away than this. I thought they were at least one rough year away from being good. So it's been really impressive to see.
Does this segue in our next segment of the surprise?
Let's do it. Yeah. What's
Bill City's definitely a surprise.
I think you got to throw them in when you look at surprises of the non-district season.
I think Westmore.
Westmore would be high on.
You know, I finally got to watch them on Thursday.
Yeah,
and they're pretty good.
They really are.
Braxton Borfin played really well. The defense played really well too against Edmund North, who's kind of struggling on offense right now. But you know, I was really impressed with. Especially how the defense played in that second half, you know, they really kind of turned that into the rout.
Right. I think the defense probably is still getting overlooked a little bit because they gave up a lot of points against Moore after they got ahead. But they played really well against Southmore to hold Southmore to 28 and shut them down on back to back drives in overtime in two overtimes. It was really impressive. So I think that we're going to see a lot more out of that defense as the season goes forward. I think we'll see another solid performance from them this week. So they would definitely be on my list. A little bit off the radar, Holdenville, with when you factor in everything that they've been through with the injured player who is still in the hospital, you know, had a blood clot on his brain. They've played the last two weeks, you know, going through all of that. For them to be unbeaten right now has been quite a surprise. So,
would Carl Albert fall in this surprise category? Maybe how dominant they have been.
Yeah, I think that they've been way better. I think that we expected them to be a top 10 team. I don't know that we expected them to be one or two, and I think that that's where you've got to put them right now.
Yeah, they're just dominating. When I watched them against Ardmore on Friday, it was just—it was night and day difference between those two teams.
Because I think Ardmore is really good.
They are really good. They're fast.
They got a lot of talent.
They got a lot of talent, and Carl Albert matched it and overpowered them at the same time.
Yeah. And so we'll see. You know, Guthrie is a different animal in that it's a big rivalry game, and they play every year.
It's going to be power.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be really interesting this week to see what they can do with that. But just in general, yeah, I think that they definitely qualify.
I think Johnny Bazell is maybe a surprise.
Yeah, he definitely
even
is
by himself,
player-wise. Yeah,
he is playing out of his mind right now.
Yeah,
he looks so confident out there with the football, running the read option. Because he threw an interception, and they immediately just started going back to read option heavy.
Right,
and I think he threw four passes after the interception in the second quarter.
Yeah,
and he just ran it all over the place and ran for over 200 yards and was unstoppable against a fast Ardmore defense.
Right, exactly. They've got speed. You know what? This is a weird one, but I'm going to throw Jinx out there.
Yeah.
Because when I looked at the Union game and then this week they had Springdale, I really thought that they could be looking at a couple of losses because of all the talent they've graduated. You know, there was a lot of talk that they were down this year, and it obviously they still look to be Jinx, and I probably shouldn't be surprised by that.
Yeah.
But,
it's what Jinx does, I guess.
Right, exactly.
What about Millwood?
That's another one that I would put on in kind of the Carl Albert category, because I thought that they were going to be a lot better this year than they were a year ago. But to beat Douglas and Casha Hall back to back, and do it the way that they have, I mean, that if there's a better defensive line in Class 2A football than what Millwood has, I would love to see it.
Yeah,
tell me where it is, and I'll go watch them this Friday. The way that defensive line has played is just incredible. I mean, you know, you want to say, oh, they gave up 32 points this week. That's against a 4A team, a 4A team that beat a 6A team earlier this year, Bartlesville.
Yeah, a 4A team that's pretty good. That's going back on the rise. They're supposed to be going back on the rise from you know, to where they were a couple years ago.
Exactly. I mean, I still have them in the top 10 in 4A, and I think that they're going to stay there. They've got a tough one this week with Wagner, but I think that they're going to be a top 10 team at the end of the year in 4A. And boy, that was impressive. I was really surprised. Now the Millwood people are going to be upset with me this week because I'm picking them to win.
And you've been picking them to lose the whole time.
I picked them to lose to Douglas. I picked them to lose to Casha, both in close games. But they, you know, they handled Douglas pretty well, and then they were up 12 in the fourth quarter.
Who's on the Falcons' schedule this week?
They're at Stroud to begin district play. So, I'm picking the Falcons to win this one. We'll see. We'll see what happens. They're gonna definitely be upset with me. I got a phone call slightly after midnight Friday night, asking me to pick them to lose to Stroud. That's all I'm saying. It's been discussed already. So they're gonna be upset with me when I pick them to beat Stroud this week. But I think they can hold their own up there at Stroud.
I like their chances.
Yeah. So, any other surprises that have jumped out at you? I was trying to get down into some of the smaller.
I know Cashin lost this last week to Prague, but with losing Matt Harmon and to be able to win like they did the week before, right, and to hang with a team,
right,
that just made the semifinals last year in 2A and is now up in 3A and is playing in his top 10 team there,
yeah,
and to hang with them like that impressed me.
Yeah, it really has, and we'll. You know, the future of what they're able to accomplish this year is obviously going to be dictated by Matt Harmon's return.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard it's like week 10.
Yeah, it could be playoff time when he gets back. So, you know, that's definitely a possibility. And so we'll see what they can do there. But yeah, you know, I think it probably would have been a toss up game the way Prague is playing. I think that would have been a toss up game anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Even with Harmon, because I think that Prague is playing really well. Like you said, they're a 3A team now.
Defense is really good there. I think
they play some really good defense, and they've shut down some really good offenses. So I'm trying to think of whether I would have picked it differently. I picked Prague by I think I picked them by around 10, somewhere in that range, like a 28-17 type of score. Trying to think of if I would have picked Cashin. I might have picked Cashin. It would have depended probably on what Cashin had done with Harmon up until that point. You know, if they had they'd just been blowing out everybody and putting up 70 points a game, I might have leaned toward picking Cashin in that game. But
the biggest question I have with Cashin right now is, does it affect him on offense or defense more to lose Harmon? And we talk about his quarterback stuff so much,
right?
But he's a really good linebacker.
He is.
For them.
He is,
and that's how he got hurt.
Yeah, exactly. He got hurt on a defensive play. You know, he had 137 tackles last year on our All-State team as a linebacker last year. Now, obviously, his offensive contributions weighed into that significantly, that decision. But because it was him as an overall player that got him selected to that spot. But yeah, he is really important on that defense. He's just his football knowledge, being on the field and understanding what an opposing offense is going to do, things like that, I think are very valuable to that Cashin team. So his absence definitely, I think, hurts on both sides of the ball. But they've played really well. You know, they've got without him, they still have a lot of guys who have played in a lot of really important football games. Talking to Lynn Shackelford before the season, he said the very first team meeting right before practice started, had all those guys sitting down in the locker room, and he said, "Stand up if you played meaningful minutes in a state championship game." And 12 kids stood up.
That's pretty big time for a Class A team.
At Class A, a team that only had 21 players at the end of the year last year when they were making their run to the state title game. Now they've lost the last two Class A state finals.
But they've gotten there.
But they've gotten there 2 years in a row. You know, and the year before that, when Harmon was just a freshman, they made a strong run. So, I mean, they've got a lot of guys who have played in a lot of really important games, and I think that's going to benefit them even without Matt at quarterback. So,
speaking of another one down the road, Crescent.
That turnaround that they've had from, you know, 2 years ago being winless to where they are now, they're looking
really strong.
And they're
doing without their quarterback for the season. Right. They lost their quarterback, too, Nash Walker,
exactly.
who's their stud, go-to guy.
Yeah.
And he tore his ACL, and he's done. And so for them to keep winning like they have, I mean,
absolutely,
that's really impressive. And I would be probably in trouble with JL Fisher if I didn't talk about Crescent. I'm talking about Cashin.
Right.
Considering he was the guy that kept going up to me at Coach's Clinic and promoting Crescent more than Cashin.
Right.
So that's a friendly rivalry they have down the road from each other there.
That's exactly right. So, yeah, no, that they've been very impressive. They jumped up into the top 10 really early this season and have hung there. So Really solid job what they've done. Like I said, just a couple of years removed from a really rough year for them. So, all right, well let's turn the focus ahead to week four. What is it out there that that you're really looking forward to in week four of the season? And like I said, there were some really interesting non-district games.
We touched on earlier, Carl Albert Guthrie is obviously intriguing. It's right. Our game of the week.
Right,
but,
exactly.
That one. But also, I look here, and I can't remember the top 10 off the top of my head, but Deer Creek at Stillwater kind of intrigues me.
Right.
Stillwater's played really well. Mm. Deer Creek is 0-3 through a really tough non-district schedule for them.
Exactly.
They would have had to play this if they would have stayed in 5A.
Right, exactly.
And they'd have been playing 6A1 teams.
Mm-hmm.
Through the first 3 weeks as a 5A team, and it would have been, and no one would have thought much of it. Like, oh, yeah, they're supposed to lose these. 6A2, people kind of look at them and say, maybe they're not very good.
Right.
You know, they're a 6A team now. They're supposed to win some of these games.
Right.
And I don't think that's the case. I think they're going to be fine. And this week could be the kind of chance that they have to show, hey, we're still going to be able to win some games here if they can go to Stillwater and pull off an upset at this point. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Stillwater has really impressed me. Looking back now, I saw them against Moore in the only game that Stillwater lost, and I'm kind of a little bit surprised now that they even mm-hmm. lost that game the way that they've been playing, to go beat Mustang the way that they did and take control of that. They seem to have Mustang's number for some reason. They do, don't they? I wish I had thought ahead enough to look it up, but they've won. Definitely two of the last three in situations where Mustang had what we thought was the better team.
Yeah, I think it was the last year Mustang won, I think.
Yeah.
And then year before, though, the Stillwater upset him, and that was a huge shock because that was the year Mustang, I think, almost beat Union and got really far in the semis.
Exactly.
And so everyone was really surprised that year.
Yeah, they went, that Mustang team ended up going up to Broken Arrow, first round of the playoffs, and winning there.
That's right, yep.
And then playing Union again, earlier during the regular season, they were throwing into the end zone in the final minute, mm-hmm. down by a touchdown, and they got smoked by Union in the semifinals that year. But
it's usually how it goes with Union and Jinx. You can compete with them in the regular season, and then they turn around in the playoffs and do that. So.
Yeah, but we talked a lot about Del City earlier. They're at Altus.
That's a good one.
When you just look at that district in general. Is just crazy, and it's unbelievable when you start looking at all the teams in that district and where things could go from there. When you've got Del City, Altus, Ardmore, who I still think is really good, and Lawton Mack, who they're the number one team.
Yeah,
in the state.
And they're really good from what I saw in the scrimmage in the preseason.
Exactly.
Really good.
It makes me feel bad for a team like Duncan, who I saw against PC West earlier this year, and they really struggled that night and had some. Some misfortunate things go against them, but I think that they're a 5A caliber playoff team, and they've got almost no shot to get to break through that top four.
That's,
you're talking about number one, number four, five, and six, I think, in my rankings, if I'm remembering it right.
That's what 5A2 used to be for a few years.
Right,
and
exactly.
Now it's kind of flipped.
Exactly, yeah. It's not like 5A2 is...
Still Guthrie, Carl Albert,
and McGinnis also in the top 10. So, it's really kind of crazy to look at that district. And
what about Locust Grove at Berryhill? Locust Grove has played better than I thought they would, considering who they graduated with, Mason Fine and Jason Pirtle.
Right,
their offense still putting up big numbers, and Berryhill's pretty good team still.
Exactly.
So that could be a good test.
One, that one I think is a really good game, and. I really that was the one I hesitated to put it on the list, on the top 10 list, because it was a non-district game. But there aren't very many games that feel the way that one feels, where you've got a team that's trying to prove itself, that they mm-hmm. haven't fallen off. They're unbeaten right now. And then you've got a Berryhill team that has played really well and wants to prove that they deserve to be a top three team, which is where we've got them ranked right now. So the implications of that, even though it's a non-district game and maybe guys are going to try to rest some people, I don't necessarily see that being the case.
No,
they might want to, but
Not those guys.
No, I don't think so. So, yeah, that'll be really interesting. And, you know, people point to Lucas Grove's win over Adair and say, well, Adair didn't have B.J. Bradbury. Lucas Grove still scored 56 points.
Yeah, that Bradbury doesn't stop 56 right. points from happening.
Exactly. So, unless he was going to make 8 interceptions that night. So,
I guess he could have.
Maybe so.
He's pretty good.
He is a talented fellow. I know Adair wants him back in the fold as soon as possible. So, but yeah, that you've got Westmore Bixby, which I find incredibly
yes.
fascinating.
Yes.
If it hadn't been this week, if this had been last week in week 3, it would have been top 2 or 3 games on the list.
Yeah.
But its significance drops a little bit when you've got real games that mm-hmm. That actually count toward the playoffs on the schedule this week. So that caused it to drop down the list and ended up at number 9, I guess, is where I ended up.
We also have not talked about Clinton at Heritage Hall.
That's exactly right.
That's an intriguing. It's a district game now.
Yeah.
They always play non-district the last few years, but now it's a district game, so they're familiar with each other. But is Heritage Hall really going to be familiar with Clinton? They just went through a coaching change last week.
Yeah.
To Reed Box, the former Hollis coach, who was our All-State coach of the year.
Yeah.
You know, they go from Phil Coombs to Reed Box. Is he going to change things?
Right.
How is Clinton's players going to respond to this?
Exactly.
You know, on the road at Heritage Hall, which is not, I mean, Heritage Hall hasn't lost 30 straight games. I mean,
right.
they haven't lost since, 2014.
Right.
And so that one really intrigues me, too, just to see what Clinton's going to be like and how Heritage Hall reacts to it, you know, how they prepare for it. Because I had, you know, Andy Bogert was like, well, what do we do? How do we prepare for these guys? I don't know anything about Reed Box.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Like, it's like, I don't know what kind of coach he is, you
right.
know? He's like, I knew Phil Coombs, but I don't know Reed Box.
Exactly.
And so
they didn't play last week. And they knew Mike Lee well before that.
Yeah.
So, I mean... Yeah, so
and they had an off week last week, so there's no film for them to go off of what Clinton's going to do with Reed
exactly.
Box.
And I hadn't seen Clinton this year. I don't know what type of offense Coons was running. I assume it's typical of the offenses he had been running,
run heavy and
yeah. But I saw a few Reed Box Hollis games, and it was a lot of. You know, triple option type stuff and, you know, some veer and some wishbone looks and different type of things like that. So I don't know. I don't know what kind of changes he makes if he tries to stick from a continuity standpoint to the type of offense they've been running. If he wants to put in, you know, what he's more comfortable with, what he's run in the past. And if I'm Brett Bogert, I have no idea either.
Yeah.
I have no idea what to prepare for. So. I think that they'll probably do some things that Heritage Hall didn't expect at all, and they could probably turn that into some points. And I think that they'll be able to score. Now, whether or not they'll be able to outscore Heritage Hall,
that's
going to
be really tough because their offense is still really good with Santana Randall and Blake Adams and Dawson Evans and just I mean. I can't think of the running back, little running back guy's name.
Bryce Soberanis.
Yeah, Soberanis and, you know, guys like that. I mean, there's still just a ton of talent on offense.
Yeah, they've got weapons all over the field.
You know, Santana Randall had a 99-yard kickoff return last week.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those offenses. I know when I was covering their game against John Marshall, their webcast guy comes over and wants to ask me for some stats, and I gave him I give him Blake Adams' passing stats, and so who's leading the receiver? It's like nobody really. There's like 8 guys caught a pass in the first half. They spread the ball around all over the place. So, you know, they've got 2 or 3 different guys who'll get a look at running back. So, and all of them can make plays. So, it'll be really interesting to see what they do there. And I think that'll be the big issue for Clinton because it doesn't matter who your coach is or what your scheme is. You still got to stop all of those guys, mm-hmm. and that's the big challenge. So, so we'll see what they're able to do there. But,
and they almost had Steve Adams and Andre Robertson on their team
exactly,
last week.
Exactly. Yeah.
Added to the team.
Exactly. I mean, imagine Robertson running routes.
He looked like a legit wide receiver. I'm telling you,
I can see it.
He did. I mean, it was impressive.
Yeah.
And Blake Adams threw a touchdown pass to him first throw, and they have some chemistry right off the bat.
Yeah, exactly. It's immediate. I mean, a guy that big, it's hard to miss him.
Yeah.
looking down the list of other top 10 games, one that I'm really curious about because I'm not exactly sure how good either of these two teams might be. It's Minko at Wynnewood.
Yes.
Because I think that they've both got a chance to be really good. Minko is undefeated. Wynnewood is 2-1, but their loss was to Sulphur, a really good 3A team. I'm really curious to see what the ceiling is for these two teams. Minko beat Ringling, who was number two at the time. Ringling turned around and lost to a 3A team, or 2A team this week. They went up in class, I know, and got beat. So I'm not sure whether it's a down year for Ringling, or if Minko is starting to look like they're taking the next step. They lost some linemen off of last year's team. I thought that might slow them down a little bit. But Tucker Halstead is, you look around Class A, and he's one of the most impactful players on both sides of the ball. It's going to be really interesting.
Wynnewood's without Odom right now.
That's right. Baron Odom,
yeah.
their Division I defensive end tight end.
He got hurt in week one and is going to be out until about the playoffs, it sounds like. And,
yeah.
But they're still winning with their defense and
right.
A couple pick sixes last week. So it's going to be a big test.
Yeah. Odom is a really talented athlete. I thought his recruiting might go even a little bit higher than, he committed to Rice pretty early. I'm not going to fault the kid for picking a school he wants to go to. I really thought he might end up getting some bigger offers than that. But tight end is a really tough position just in terms of the offenses these days. It's just becoming really scarce. If you're in a tight end body and you can't go run a 4-5 and stretch a defense, it's tough to get it, find a spot where you're going to fit in, or you got to be 6'6" like Charlie Kolar.
So freak.
Yeah, he absolutely is. How good is that receiving core? I mean, they have such a variety. Man. Is the thing that's so fascinating about Norman North's wide receivers? Because we talk about Charlie as a tight end, but he's really a wide receiver.
They run him like a wide receiver out there, and then you've got Drake Stoops, who's not very big,
right?
But he's really good,
really good, really dangerous out of the slot. Can play the underneath stuff. Can go deep. And Colin Klein, I think, is one of the better deep threats around in 6A football. So you put those three guys out there with a guy who can get the ball. I mean, Brandon Marquard's not gonna go to Oklahoma State next year or anything like that, but he can distribute the ball well. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's in an offense, an offensive system where they've taught him how to avoid mistakes and how to know where to go with the ball. And that offense is really scary. One thing I think they've got going for them on the defensive side is that they don't have a lot of guys playing on both sides of the ball, which is something that makes me a little bit nervous for Southmore as they get farther into the season and get into those games against the Jinx and Union type programs. Because when you've got a lot of guys going both ways, you can get worn out really fast in a big game like that. Especially you get all hyped up for it, and you burn a little bit of energy just in the hype of the game, and the pregame excitement. So I think that's going to help Norman North a lot. Not only that, they've got some real stars on the defensive side of the ball.
Caden Mashburn is playing out of his mind.
Oh,
he absolutely is.
He is a really talented.
He's the only guy that goes somewhat two ways that I remember for a little bit. For the most part, maybe some linemen, I don't think. He comes in a short yardage situation. They need a running back,
right?
But they also don't need him that much on that because they've got Sincere Jackson back there,
exactly.
Who is a bull.
Yeah, he absolutely.
I mean, I watched him stiff arm a guy in the Norman game at the beginning of the year that I don't mind sure he really stiff armed him.
Yeah,
it looked like a video game thing where the guy got close to him and just bounced away. It was insane.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, yeah, it's not like Mashburn's back there getting 15, 20 carries. I mean, he's a linebacker who comes in and helps in some short yardage situations. So. That defense is playing really well. The offense is just out of its mind. 44, 42, and 42 points in the last three first halves of games. They had some soft competition in a couple of those. But
Santa Fe is not soft competition.
Santa Fe is not soft competition, and they put up 21 per quarter in the first two quarters of that game and put it away early. So you know, we'll see. You know, they've got a team that looks pretty solid on defense in Putnam City North on in the Thursday game this week. We'll see what they can do against them. PC North's defense has looked really good. The offense is kind of slow coming around right now. So we'll see how that one goes for them. But what else jumped out at you this week? We got Lawton Midwest City.
That's
which was a really weird game to try to judge on the topic of putting it in the top 10 games of the week, because you got 1-2 teams. And you're trying to decide how that weighs in, but these are still two teams that are looked at as should be competing for a district title.
What about Owosso Mustang? You know, Mustang struggled last week, obviously,
yeah.
And they've dealt with some suspensions and things like that.
Right.
And, this is the first chance to show that they're not who people are starting to think they are.
Right. Exactly. That they're not a team that's crumbling right now. So. That'll be important for them. You know, they will get DeAndre Thomas back, their big defensive tackle who got suspended for throwing punches in week one against UConn. I don't necessarily Owosso hasn't shown me anything yet to believe that
they're still that big four.
Exactly. So they haven't, you know, Owosso's going to have to show me a little bit more before I'm ready to say that they're, you know, back up there with the Broken Arrow type teams, even though they did play Broken Arrow close. But I think that was more of an issue of that being just a defensive game than either team being all that great. So that was definitely intriguing. We talked about the Clinton Heritage Hall game, which I think has a chance to be really fascinating.
Noble McAllister.
That one is I'm really curious about that, because McAllister is definitely down from what people expected. They look to be solid on defense, so it could be an issue of you know, strength against strength with Noble's offense. And then it comes down to, you know, what McAllister is able to do offensively against the Noble defense, which hasn't necessarily been all that great. That's where Noble needs to take steps if they want to be a playoff team in 5A3. That's the area where they've got to make progress and kind of moving into the future to try to get to that playoff caliber. So that will be the most intriguing thing about that game to me.
Yeah, and I'm still pretty proud that last week I brought up that game as kind of a game to watch with Piedmont
and
Noble, and it turned out to be a really good game. I probably actually maybe should have put that as a game at the beginning of the podcast that maybe I wanted to see, because it turned out to be pretty exciting.
Exactly.
But we don't want to give our former colleague Jason Kersey any credit and go to a Noble game really early in the year. We'll go at some point maybe. But
Right, yeah.
You know.
I'll say this for a fantastic facility that they've built.
Yes, love that place.
I covered that it was Cashin in the semifinals last year, played there, and amazing facility.
Great. Yeah, I've done stories out there and stuff, and I love going out there. But I think Noble has a chance to win this game, maybe for the first time in a few years.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the last they started out 3-0 last year, and we thought they're going to McAllister.
Right.
Sorry. Yeah, you know, like, you're still maybe not quite there, but now I think they are. They can compete with these guys. And the way Baylor Buell's playing at quarterback and Chris Robinson at receiver, I mean, I think they have a chance that they can go and win this game. They can outscore them at least.
Yeah, absolutely. And one more I'll throw out before we shut it down on the podcast.
We've kept you a little while today.
Right.
Thanks for hanging on with us.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you made it through the fair
discussion.
That's,
yeah. But it's still going on, so go get you a donut burger.
That's right. Go check it out. Go win a Pokemon. They're all over the place out there. Blanchard and Tuttle. That was another one that was right on the borderline of making the top 10 games list. I just love the fact that one of the better small school rivalries is a district game again.
Yes.
Because it was for a long time, and a few years back they even played in, it was a week 10 game with the district title.
Oh,
on the
man,
line.
That's how you want something like that.
Oh, absolutely. And so you know, then Tuttle moved up and Blanchard was stayed in 3A, and it took a while, and now Blanchard has caught up and moved up as well, and they're back in 4A together and in the same district. And I really enjoy a rivalry as a district game because it just adds to it. Especially they can play it early in the season when there's still a lot on the line for both teams. Both teams still have, you know, unless you can guarantee me it's going to be week 10 with a district title on the line, I would rather see it early in the season when there's still a lot to...
Everyone's healthy for the most part, you would think, and go on. So.
Yeah, if we can get rivalry games week 10 with either a district title or a playoff berth on the line, hey, sign me up for that.
Yep. We'll be there. We'll be there in the press box and absolutely. Hanging out.
Absolutely. So, all right, well, let's see. We covered week 3. We covered week 4. We covered second grade math facts. I think that's I think that was the gamut. That was the list this week.
Good. Yeah. Good pregame rundown.
Absolutely. Right. He's Jacob Unruh. I'm Scott Wright. This has been the News OK Varsity Podcast. Thanks for joining us.